It's time for Football Friday with Paul Feinbaum, presented by Bryant Bank, your hometown bank with big bank benefits, located in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Now, here's Dan Brennan and Dalton Erwig.
And Football Friday's with Paul Feinbaum. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Man, I can't believe we're back. it just seemed like 9 months ago when we talked last.
Kind of does. Hey, by the way, before we get to the business of all these games this week, I've got to give you credit. Great line. Earlier in the week, it was the end of like a really exhausting show, which I think all of your shows are exhausting, right? And you said to the caller, well, as much as I'd like to, they don't allow me to just walk out of the studio while the show's still in progress. I just about fell out of my recliner on that one. But it was one of those shows that were, I think you had some go-arounds with John from St. Louis again. That guy's a nutcase.
Yeah, no, he's certifiable. But he calls, he'll hang up and he'll call again. Yeah. And to me, that's entertaining. I don't know if anybody else thinks it is, but... Well,
it's always, you know, this time of year when everybody is undefeated and has a game on the schedule that week, it's fun to see how fired up the fans are, so optimistic. All of that obviously could change as soon as this weekend, but it has been really fun listening to you preview games with beat writers and then also get the fans' take on that. A Friday night big game in the SEC this yes. week, especially for a lot of our listeners, Paul, is Hugh Freeze and his Auburn Tigers in Waco to take on Baylor, and that's tonight at 7 o'clock. Hugh Freeze, obviously a lot of talk about his golf game over this offseason. How hot is his seat right now?
I'm concerned about one thing, and that's his disposition, because I'm sure he's upset by not being chosen, I think, on Wednesday to the Ryder Cup team. So I hope he can recover. But, his seat is really hot. And check back about midnight if they don't win this game, and it's going to be scorching. And the reason why it's such a big deal is that, you know, after a couple of meaningless games, they'll go back on the road at Oklahoma, team they lost to last year, and then I think the next game is at Texas A&M. They could easily have three losses by the time Georgia shows up on October 10th, and that would be terrible. Now, I lean a little bit toward Auburn in this game. I just maybe I've been told how great the receivers are and how maybe Jackson Arnold will look better. But a win would really be significant. A loss is going to be cataclysmic.
Hmm. Jackson Arnold, the reports on him, is he developing? He's got great receivers. Does he have a connection with him? What's going to happen there, Paul?
I feel like he's a pretty good quarterback. I think he had a terrible coordinator last year. He had no receivers for some reason. Every Oklahoma receiver decided to be injured at the same time. Hmm. And by the way, having said all that, they still beat Auburn. But I think he's a pretty good quarterback. It's just if Hugh Freeze is patient. Hugh Freeze has a propensity to throw everyone under the bus, notably his quarterback.
Yeah, and he has a call player for every down to throw under the bus, with first and thirds being different coaches calling plays. Also, Saturday, obviously, the premier game, and I hate Dan pointed out to me, hey, your Tennessee Vols are playing the exact same time that number one Texas is taking on number three Ohio State.
Yeah, you and a guy named Benny in Knoxville will be the two watching that channel.
I guess so, but I'm going to have to tune TV at early Saturday with that Texas-Ohio State game. I guess my question for you, Paul, is how much do you think that Texas ranking, people thinking they're just going to be fantastic this year, how much of that is because of the hype around Arch Manning, or is it because Steve Sarkisian really has a great team around Arch this year?
Well, he says they have a great team, and I think that's one reason why the hype is even hypier. that's a John from St. Louis phrase. I think it's justified. I think the thing with Arch is an enigma now. Yeah, you know, could he really be this good? I think he could. Is he worth all the platitudes that people like me have given him? Probably not. But I think he'll be the calmer of the two quarterbacks. The other one, of course, is Julian Sayin. You Alabama fans may remember him spending 3 weeks in Tuscaloosa. before Kalen DeBoer reportedly got his name wrong, and the kid said, "I'm out of here. I want to go play for Ryan Day. He will not screw my name up." But I think Texas is really built for a moment like this. They had a great chance of beating Ohio State last year. Remember Quinn Ewers, first and goal on the 3-yard line, and he managed to fumble and give up a touchdown. That's how bad I thought Quinn Ewers was.
Yeah, that was quite an end to that game. So pretty much, I mean, does Texas have just more overall talent than Ohio State, or is that kind of a toss-up?
I think they do. When you win a national championship, it's really tough. Everything changes. They also lost two of their coordinators, the OC and the DC, mm-hmm. and that takes a while. Ryan Day is a good coach. I'm still not convinced he is elite like everybody tries to make him out to be, but the pressure is on them. I think Texas has the advantage, and I also think the fact that because Fox forces the best game at noon Eastern time, that's a disadvantage for the home team. I mean, nobody wants to go to a game that early.
Yeah, that's a really good point, that 11-8, well, noon kickoff for, I guess it'll be 11 a.m. Central time there.
11 a.m. our time, yeah.
For Bama, starting the season at Florida State, which a few years ago, I mean, even last year, you'd say, well, this is a heck of a matchup to start the year. But the Seminoles had such, I mean, beyond a disappointing year last year, that I think a lot of Tide fans are assuming cakewalk here.
I'm surprised by the point spread. I thought it would be more.
Yeah. More than two touchdowns. Yeah, that's where it sits now. DeBoer finally with the chance to make this his team this offseason. You think he's done a good enough job at that?
I think he has. I just don't think you can put a team back together again after it fell apart. There's some legitimate concerns about DeBoer. Can you change the culture overnight? No. Is he hard? Is he tough enough? I mean, these are questions that everybody's asking. I do think the addition of Ryan Grubb matters. He's the offensive coordinator. I think it gives DeBoer a little more of a comfort level in calling the plays. I think I read where Grubb's the only coach, only full time coach that will be in the press box on Saturday. So that I really like what I hear about that, and I frankly think Ty Simpson is going to be a much better quarterback. You probably remember I did not like Jalen Milroe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Milroe was hot and cold, and he was big play and no play and all of that, so maybe they'll just be
a little more consistent, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's what they would hope to get out of Ty Simpson. I think Grubb coming back probably does help that program overall. I don't know what helps the program of your Tuesday guest, the LSU head coach who was signed on to be with you every week, huh, Paul?
Yeah, he came on Monday, and actually said, I said, hey, by the way, coach, really appreciate you doing it. He said, man, this is the heartbeat of the SEC. This is where you want to be. And then the next day I was on ESPN Get Up, and I said he's probably going to be on the hot seat when he loses. So I'm just hoping he didn't hear that. But I think this is real. LSU fans are crazy, and a loss here, and they'll be apoplectic.
Yeah, and it's going to be tough to win this game. It's not exactly a layup. I mean, a lot of people have Clemson there at the end of the season playing for the national championship with Club Nick back at quarterback. They think that Dabo's really figured this out. I mean, this is quite a week one matchup, and unlike the Ohio State game, this will be played at night in front of a rowdy Clemson crowd.
Yeah, I frankly think this will be a better game. I like Clemson too. I mean, the easy pick is always, oh yeah, the SEC team. But I'm not going to, because I think Klubnik is a better quarterback than Nussmeier. I think the defensive front for Clemson is pretty ferocious. Now, hard to tell sometimes when you're beating up on Wake Forest and SMU and schools like that, California, Stanford, all the top teams in the ACC. But I still think Dabo has an SEC-like program there.
Yeah, and we'll leave the LSU conversation with this, and I'll just say that the relationship between Brian Kelly and LSU fans is tenuous and complicated, and I don't think it's great. He's got to win games.
He does. He's got a massive buyout, as all these coaches do. But they are the most pro-like fan base in the SEC, and you know why. I mean, they're around the corner from the Saints, mm-hmm. and they don't look at any. They, unlike college fans who put up a buffer, even though the players are now making millions of dollars, LSU fans, they don't convert on a third down. They're ready to fire the coach, and they'll be ready to fire him Saturday night.
Yeah, and unfortunately for LSU fans, they might not be good enough to beat Clemson, but we know they're good enough to beat the New Orleans Saints this year. So either way they turn, they're going to have a...
Yeah, no, they're going to try to schedule them in the bowl season.
That's a tough one for them. We're talking with Paul Feinbaum for Football Fridays, first of the year, actually, presented by Bryant Bank, and we get a long football weekend with Labor Day on the way. So a Sunday game in Atlanta after that Tennessee-Syracuse game in Atlanta on Saturday. And you've got South Carolina, a lot of high expectations for folks for South Carolina this year, taking on Virginia Tech. That whole Beamer family storyline enters this one. But I think Lenora Sellers is probably who most people will be tuning in to see this weekend, Paul.
Yeah, this is a big deal if your last name is Beamer. But I don't know of anybody else. I talked to the Virginia Tech coach the other day, and yeah, pretty boring guy, let's be honest. And
I watched that, and I was going to compliment him, but I'll leave that. I won't do that now.
Well, I mean, I'll give him this. I mean, he still believes that people will go to that players will go to Virginia Tech just because they're Virginia Tech, mm-hmm. and it's not about the money. That was where I kind of disconnected. He's a good old boy. You'd like to have him painting your house. I'm just not sure how good he is as a football coach.
Oh, that's brutal. Yeah. That is brutal.
Lenora Sellers, I mean, could he be in the – he could obviously be in the Heisman conversation at the end of the year, but we kind of have a similar thing going with him and Lagway at Florida. They showed some really good stuff as freshmen, both dealt with some injuries, but both could really elevate their teams into the top 10 easily.
Yeah, the problem for both is the same thing. It's a schedule. I don't know how Florida can be a top 10 team at the end, and I really don't think South Carolina either. I mean, they go to LSU. They go to Ole Miss. I mean, they have Alabama at home, which is, you know, maybe a turnaround, but there are just so many brutal games, and I think he and Lagway are probably on the same level as Nussmeier, but the schedule will undo at least one of those two.
I just got a call from a guy named Brent Pry. He wants to paint my house next week.
I hate to tell you, but I've already got him pressure washing mine.
Already booked. Paul, as always, really good to talk with you again to start this season, and looking forward to many more great conversations throughout. I really appreciate your time here for Football Fridays.
My pleasure, guys. See you next week.
You got it. Paul right. Feinbaum, right there.
That's him. And he does a great job, and you can hear him if you were unaware. The Paul Feinbaum Show on FM Talk 106.5 every weekday, 2 to 6 p.m. And that's how we start the year at Auburn at Baylor tonight. Remember, you can hear that here on FM Talk 106.5 with the pregame show beginning at 4 this afternoon. We will have to cut into Feinbaum a little bit for that.
Yeah.
And then plenty more football tomorrow where that came from.
Okay. And also this segment brought to you in part by Brent Pry pressure washing.
Yeah. You got him doing the pressure washing, but obviously, of course, also Bryant Bank who brings it to you week in and week out. Appreciate them. More Mobile Mornings on the way, 251-343-0106 if you want to hop in on that text line.
Unfortunately, the weekend is rolling in at the same time the rain is rolling in. And as the rain rolls in, you got problems on the roads.
Yeah, and looking like a bad accident there. Kane referenced it. But northbound I-65, just past Government, the exit there, before you get to the airport exit, closer to the Government side of things, though. Wreck northbound 65. Overturned vehicle. It's in the median, and the first responders have been there for some time now, but traffic is moving slowly, if at all. And I was watching Leanna. She was watching the feed from the Aldot cams, and they had stopped traffic completely at one point. I'll get her to come in and tell me if it's still stopped. But right now, real trouble northbound 65 because of an overturned vehicle. We'll keep you updated on that throughout the morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line also works as the phone number if you want to call up and talk with us in person. And plenty of texts already this morning, and plenty more to get to this hour, including Barry Moore, Congressman AL1, running for the soon-to-be-vacated Senate seat that Tommy Tuberville currently holds. Held some town halls here recently, a couple this week at least. He had one on Tuesday night, I believe. That one was in, was it Satsuma? No.
Yeah, Satsuma.
Okay, Satsuma on Tuesday night.
In Daphne.
Said very few people appeared at that one. I mean, they didn't really make it known that he was going to be holding these town halls. Didn't put out at least any widely spread press releases. But then Daphne night on Wednesday, you had Barry Moore, or Daphne on Wednesday night had Barry Moore at a town hall. And some protesters that 1819 calls a small but vocal crowd of malcontents bent on derailing the evening with continuous shouting and booing. Said it was members of Indivisible Baldwin County, which Daniel Taylor with 1819 News calls a chapter of the far left Soros-backed national organization Indivisible. Said they encouraged members to attend the meeting and afterward thanked them for their efforts. Tabitha Eisner, literally.
I see that. Good job, team, she said.
Wrote, good job, team, vice chair of the Alabama Democratic Party. And in that 1819 article, they write about the coverage from a different media outlet, AL.com, where John Sharp was writing about it. And John Sharp noted in his story, he said that Barry Moore, he talks about when most of the heckling happened. He said the biggest heckling Moore got was on his responses to questions about abortion, which is interesting because while obviously the left has a problem with the right's views on abortion, especially someone as conservative as Barry Moore is, that's not really in the current conversation, is it?
No, you think it'd be all about immigration, all about Trump's takeover of D.C., the federal takeover there. You know, those are the top issues right now. And so what happens is, you know, they two writers could not have described the scene
any differently.
Yeah. Right? You know, these are opportunities for the left, and some it's organized or maybe softly organized, whatever. But they like to have this kind of on record where they're there and they're shouting down a Republican and embarrassing him at a town hall meeting. And then you're spreading the sentiment that there's a lot of dissatisfaction.
Right. Yeah. So,
and then, of course, you have that footage for to embarrass them later on in campaigns.
And it's their right, of course,
sure,
to do that. If I were Moore, I maybe would have made this a little more known he would be doing these, because I think he would have had more supporters in attendance.
Well, maybe he didn't put it out there because he didn't want them
didn't
showing
want this
up
to happen.
Yeah.
But I guess you need to keep in mind, not everyone's going to know this, but that's an organized effort from a group. Those aren't random Daphne residents showing up. Go, oh, you're here too? Wow, we're both here to heckle tonight? No, it's kind of a group thing.
That's what it seems like, right? And even are they residents of Baldwin County too?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, they're part of that Indivisible Baldwin County, so
yeah,
you would think so. AL.com, they noted Moore after the town hall left out the back of City Hall. I know 1819 had a problem with that.
Hey, if you're part of that group, give us a call, 251-343-0106.
FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on a Friday. Right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Good rainy morning, guys.
Yeah, it is.
Girls and guys.
Got Leanna on the scene here, too. It is. It is a little rainy. Unfortunately, we're dealing with some accidents this morning, at least one of which appears to be serious, but we know that can happen when it's raining out there. McConnell Automotive. Let's talk about what you have on the lot first, and then where people can go if they get some dings and dents. But you have a lot of vehicles out there right now, both pre-owned and brand new.
That's right. And we're getting them in every day. We're buying cars every day. And like you said, if you have that unfortunate accident, don't forget McConnell Collision Center. You can call them back there at 251-476-4141. They'll help you with all your insurance needs and set you up with a loaner car and fix your car. And if you get that, like I said, get that unfortunate phone call, says it's total, McConnellAutomotive.com. We got a great selection of pre-owned and new. We got, you know, it's the last weekend of the month. We're going to have football on tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We'll have a little food here. And you're not going to miss anything. We got eight TVs. I mean, if you want to watch eight different games, you can.
Yeah.
Come on in and see us, and hope this weather cooperates, and hope everybody be careful because it's Labor Day weekend, and like I said, you have that unfortunate accident, come see us.
Yeah, it's a tailgate going on in McConnell Automotive on a Saturday. That's how it is there. Louie, we appreciate your time and all the great work you guys do at McConnell.
Hey, thank y'all very much, and y'all be careful out there.
You too. That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and that website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
836, Stan and Dalton, the text line, 251-343-0106. A lot of the texts this morning are about some of the accidents and some of the road problems and concerns out there. We appreciate that, but feel free to text.
Yeah, and let's go through some of these texts. Michael says, how are the U.S. flags disposed of? So I think you're referencing a story we had last hour, and it comes off the heels of that conversation at the beginning of this week with the Trump executive order asking the Attorney General, DOJ, to go after people that burn the American flag. And there was more context to that executive order, more context than even Trump let on as he was speaking to the press. But that brought up ton of opinions from folks, First Amendment speech rights and things of that nature. It also had some people asking Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile, hey, with all this talk, I actually do have an American flag that needs to be disposed of. What's the proper way to do that? And Sean gave some ideas on how to do that, but now some news in from our news partners at WKRG, Mobile County making it even easier for residents to properly dispose of their old, worn, or damaged flags. They put out a news release this week saying the county is expanding its flag disposal program, adding about 20 new locations. Residents were already able to take their flags to Government Plaza in Mobile, but they can now also take them to, let me list them out here for you, Historic Avenue Culture Center, the Mobile County License Commission offices, so Michael Square, Theodore, 8 Mile, and Citronelle, all of those offices, the Mobile County Sheriff's offices, the Administration Office, Southside Substation, and Northside Substation, the Chickasaw Library, Pritchard Library, Satsuma Library, Citronelle Memorial Library, Sims City Hall, Mount Vernon Town Hall, Saraland City Hall, Dauphin Island Town Hall, Bayou LaBattery City Hall, the Grand Bay St. Elmo Community and Senior Center, and the Connie Hudson Mobile Regional Senior Community Center. Those are all the new locations, which is absolutely fantastic. Commissioner Merceria Ludgood said, we've partnered with the U.S. Naval Sea Cadet Corps Dunlap Division to collect and respectfully retire worn and tattered flags from our communities. And those disposal boxes available at each location during normal business hours. All types of U.S. flags are accepted. They ask that you fold the flag respectfully before you put it in the box. And they said all the boxes follow the U.S. flag code for retirement. I'm guessing that they take them and properly burn them, properly give them a flag, I guess, funeral, as it were. But it's great. So many more locations available now to do that. Michael, there's your answer. Joel in Somerdale. So about the protesters at the Barry Moore Town Hall.
Yeah.
And I think you said on 1819 they had is it Dale Strong also dealing with some hecklers at a town hall recently? I think it was Dale Strong.
It was up in Madison, which is where Strong's from. Yeah. So it looks like it was, again, a concerted effort to mess with the whole town hall thing.
Yeah, and it's happening across the country. But Joel, so he texted in. He said, oh, it is a group effort. He even said that Barry Moore tried. Okay, so he said, last night I was flipping the news channels, and that liberal show, the Tom Hartman Show, Joel said, I believe I had stopped on it there because sometimes it's just hilarious to listen to people. There was an actual caller from Mobile that called in about heckling Barry Moore. So he called in, or they, I don't know if it's a he or she, called in last night on that liberal show. Oh, it is a group effort. He even said that Barry Moore tried to announce that he was going to be there, and they said they still organized and still showed up to heckle them. Said this was a Democratic supporter. He said there were a few Barry Moore supporters, but there were a lot more Democrats there heckling. This was clearly an organized pursuit against Barry Moore.
They love the optics of it, you know, and if you play it or send it off without any real context around it, maybe create a commercial with it and everything like that, campaigning-wise, later on. But it's a political staging, if you want to call it that. Now, their views maybe exactly how they feel. And that's You know, so that part of it may not be insincere, but the idea of getting a lot of people to go to these meetings and to kind of drown out one side as opposed to what they've got to say, and pretty much to drown out the message of the speaker himself.
Yeah, and then have these stories written, right?
Like they got.
Pete says, we appreciate the paid protesters' tantrums. It reminds us why it's so important Republicans vote and keep these lunatics far from power. You have some football talk as well this morning. When the Seminoles take the field, they will be under a flash flood watch, but with an ocean on both sides of Tallahassee, they will be ill-prepared for the high tide that will flood Osceola with the roll tide flood. Leonard's Losers, Florida at, and then the text cuts off there, but a nod to Leonard's Losers from back in the day.
Old day, yeah. Florida State is who we meant, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, on the heels of our conversation with Paul Feinbaum, talking about the Virginia Tech coach, Jared says Brent Pry has a vacation home on Ono Island.
Oh.
May have heard us. Well, he's probably getting ready for some football, but maybe some family.
People in the neighborhood association.
They might pass it along.
Alert him.
Yeah, because Feinbaum was saying he was rather dry. You kind of stood up for him, but then at the end,
I stuck
that knife in.
Well, you know, pressure washer, is that really a knife? But I thought he was pretty good. He's the Virginia Tech coach. They've gone through a few coaches up there. You know, since Beamer, they really haven't been much of a threat.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the guy. I thought he's good.
This texter, digging the knife in even further on the Virginia Tech coach, said, what's wrong with you guys? Brent Pry is opening Brent's used auto parts and lingerie shop. I'm saying he's not. Yeah. So the jokes continue.
Yeah.
251-343-0106. That's the text line and the phone line if you want to give us a call. Good breakdown from Kyle Hamrick at Lanyap on the mayoral earlier this week, and how those votes broke down in different precincts. And it is interesting. What would this race have looked like without Paul Prine in the race? Which that could mean a number of different things. You know, it may have meant less turnout. I think a lot of people were fired up to go vote specifically for Prine and no other reason. But he also, where he finished in so many precincts, how did that turn this election? Because Paul Prine finished second in a ton of locations across the city. They write here, Hamrick writes, approximately 41,245 of Mobile's 157,823 registered voters voted. It's about 26% turnout.
Yeah, less than a third.
I think with my rough math on Wednesday morning, I pegged it between 25% and 30%. So not bad. Saw Cherry Gottis and Drummond advance to that runoff next month over Prine and Mobile County Commissioner Connie Hudson. Drummond had the most votes, obviously, about 2,500 more than Cherry Gottis, who had around 3,000 more than Prine, who had around 400 votes more than Hudson. So all in all, I mean, Hudson, who finished last, had 7,722 votes. Drummond had 13,897. I know she nearly doubled Hudson's, but with four candidates, I don't think that's a very large span in this grand scheme of things. But Hammer continues, Drummond won 25 of the 37 voting precincts in Mobile. Chair Gottis won 7 of the 37 precincts. Prine won 2 precincts. Hudson won 4. But Prine finished second in 30 of the – no, I'm sorry. He finished runner-up in 16 precincts total, second behind Drummond in 14 of those precincts, and the runner-up in 16.
Behind Spiro?
Yeah. So in 2 of them, he finished second behind Spiro, it appears. But what's kind of interesting here, where Drummond did well, Prine did better – than Spiro did, which can provide some hints on maybe how things might go in that runoff election next month. Hamrick writes, results from Burroughs Elementary School in District 4 showed the narrowest margin between Drummond and Prine. Drummond had 221 votes there. Prine had 219. The widest margin between Drummond and Prine was from the Figures Park Community Center on Donald Street, where Drummond won 905 votes and Prine picked up 199. He wrote, in the other 12 precincts where Prine directly tailed Drummond, the difference between the two averaged roughly 213 votes. So it doesn't sound like in many of the precincts that Drummond won that Spiro or Connie were getting very much support.
Yeah,
it doesn't sound like there were very many close races between the two, even though those two are now locked into the runoff. Chair Gattis followed Prine's lead in 19 precincts, but bested the former head of Mobile's law enforcement agency in 18. So if it was a head-to-head, Prine was actually ahead of Spiro in as far as the number of precincts won.
Yeah.
Chair Gattis had the biggest lead over Prine at Dauphin Way Baptist Church, where he picked up 1,571 votes, and Prine picked up 131. Prine topped Chair Gattis by the widest margin on House Ferry Road in District 7 at the Independent Living Center. Prine had 401 votes there. Chair Gattis had 195. And Hudson brought up in fourth place in 17 precincts, came in second 8 times, and placed third 8 times. And maybe unsurprisingly, Connie Hudson's best performance came at the Connie Hudson Center. Yeah, Regional Senior Community Center on Hillcrest. Had 457 votes, which is the most she would earn from any polling location.
Okay. Now, with that being said, has a brighter light been shined on this thing where we can have a more discernible forecast as to what's about to happen? Because right away there were opinions that, oh well, because she only got 33% of the vote rather than closer to 40, talking about
Drummond,
that does not bode well for her against the three candidates. Now she'll be just against one, obviously, in the runoff. That she and you're thinking early on was the same, that you thought she probably should have secured more, considering there was the three candidates now down to one.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you feel about it now?
Well, yeah, my initial thoughts were she didn't have enough ceiling going into this runoff, and that maybe it'd be possible that Prine supporters and Hudson supporters would there'd be a much higher percentage of them backing Spiro rather than Drummond. It's tough to tell how many just won't turn out to vote, but really looking at these numbers, I mean, the Prine voters are probably the answer. Like, wherever Prine voters go, I think will determine the winner of this race. Because,
yeah.
And I don't think it's as one-sided as maybe I believed originally that they'd come around to Spiro. A lot of people voted for Prine specifically because of the issues they had with Mayor Stimson's office and the way that entire
His entire firing was handled. Stimson obviously then
endorses Spiro.
And there's got to be a divide there that might be tough to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
Either Prime voters not voting at all,
yeah,
or Prime voters voting for Drummond to stick it to the Spiro side.
Yeah, so if you're a Prine voter, if you voted for Prine this week, text us 251-343-0106. Are you more likely to vote for Drummond? Are you more likely to go up and vote for Spiro next month? Or are you just going to stay home? Because I think that is the answer to our question here, how this thing will look next month.
It might be, and you know, there may be this too. You know, maybe Spiro's group did not get out the vote as much as they. Maybe they didn't hit their ceiling. Maybe too many of them were at home, and now they'll be prompted to look. We told you to go vote, and mm-hmm. you didn't. And now, because these things are so organized, you know, and you could just feel it. Well, I felt it at the poll, at the polls at First Baptist, or rather Dauphin Way Baptist. You could feel it was a Spiro crowd there. Maybe they do a better job of getting more people out to vote. Maybe there are numbers that they left at home.
Mm.
But I don't know.
Well, it's really difficult if someone stays at home for the big election, which is what we had this week.
Why
the turnout for runoffs is usually much, much lower. There will be no other races on the ballot because none of the city council races went to runoff. So it'll just be between Drummond and Spiro. With 26% turnout this week, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there was between 10 and 15% turnout for the election next month.
That would be amazingly low, and then every vote would mean so much.
Mm-hmm.
Every vote would mean so much. I don't know what you just read. All that is very interesting. I'm just not quite sharp enough to know what it tells us.
Well, I said that, but Brandon here says, I knew there would be a runoff, so I waited. I'll vote on the 23rd. This texter, I voted for Prine. Now I will vote for Spiro. Another one, Prine voter here, might sit out, might vote for Spiro. Unsure. That's from EPG and West Mobile. We'll read more of those texts when we get back to 251-343-0106.
You know who's listening very closely to what we're saying and what you're reading off the text line? That would be Spiro. He'd like to know what they're going to do. It is 852, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Jeff Poore on the way next.
Yeah, he'll have
How about his lineup?
Three guests today, Todd Stacey at 9:30, Scott Buttram with the Trustful Tribune at 10:30, and then State Senator Chris Elliott on with Jeff at 11:30.
Okay.
Dirt Digger says, I love college football, but instead of watching Auburn tonight, I'm going to watch Dan the Man, Friday Night Lights. Go, Dan, says Dirt Digger.
Well, that's nice, Dirt Digger. I appreciate that. Thank you. I mean, Spanish Ford going up against Auburn, that's a tough task right there.
Yeah, but he's coming through for you, and he'll be at the Spanish Fort Theodore game. 8:56. Appreciate all your texts this morning.
How about the text of encouragement for you, Coach Dalton Orwig?
That's right.
Of the Cottage Hill Christian 600 flag football. This is that team's marching band. They have their own band. Their own song that that's just for the flag footballers, the 6 and under.
Yeah.
And that opener is a week from Monday.
Labor
Day. Best of luck to you.
Well, you know, at practice, we've been working on playing fast and fearless. A lot of heart and grit from that team.
Yeah.
It's never easy starting the year on the hot seat. And believe me, my family, we realize this could end at any moment. As co-coach, special teams coach of our flag football team, I know that one bad game could be it for me.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of like LSU fans over at Cottage Hill.
Yeah, but listen, the locker room's behind me, and we're just going to go out and take it one down at a time.
You're the coach that walks some 500 feet to the bathroom every day.
Yeah.
So you're winning favor with the locker room because you're the one that gives them bathroom breaks.
I thought this would be me getting out there playing some football with my daughter, having a good time. What it's turned into is a lesson every practice on how to be a teacher, more or less. I did not expect. So, you know, 5 and 6 year olds, we have 1 hour to practice. We walk across a roadway and a parking lot to get to the practice field, which means when one of the kids needs to go to the bathroom,
yeah,
you have to walk back across the parking lot, back across another street, get up into the building. And when you're dealing with 5 and 6 year olds.
And children of both genders.
Yes, wow. Yes. So,
that complicates.
And they go, hey, I've got to go to the bathroom. And my mistake yesterday was saying, okay, does anyone else need to go to the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
And many hands shot up at the same time. So we've been working through that. But I'm excited. It's really fun being out there with the kids.
Speaking of working through that, people are working through trying to make sure that they're in our pick 'em contest.
Yep. And tomorrow is when our contest officially begins, with our first game kicking off at 11 in the morning. Remember what's at stake here. It's free to play. But our great prize from Spring Hill Ace Hardware, valued at $1,500, you get this Rectech Patio Legend 400 Wi-Fi grill and smoker. A wood pellet grill and smoker is awesome. A cover with that, some pellets as well. The TurtleBox Ranger Bluetooth speaker and a Yeti 32-can soft side cooler. All of that going to one person. Email me if you're having issues getting in. Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, at fmtalk1065.com. We're going to keep it open through next week for you to enter if you have trouble this weekend. You will be starting behind the ball, but
yeah,
You'll still be able to get in.
Okay. All right.
And the instructions are at fmtalk1065.com.
Dana Dalton, see you on Tuesday.